You're listening to a Sin podcast. You can listen to this show live by tuning your radio to 90.7 or online at sin.org.au.
Welcome to a special represent interview direct from Canberra, where we're bringing you an interview with Dr. Karina Garland. Dr. Garland has been the Labor MP for Chisholm since 2022 and has been pushing for the changes to the HEX system we saw announced last week. We're talking to her all about that, as well as her thoughts on the upcoming budget and her memories of being one of the original members of Sin Media. We're talking to her now in her office in the Parliament House of Australia. All right, awesome. So, Karina, welcome to our first remote interview in Parliament House.
Oh, fantastic. This is so exciting to participate in your very first Parliament House interview.
Well, of course, we spoke to you over the phone last year, so it's really nice to actually be able to speak to you in person. We're talking about the HEX step changes today. So can you tell us a little bit about those? What's happening with that?
Right. So we're making changes so that about $3 billion of debt will be wiped for around 3 million students on a range of different student support loan programs, including HELP and VET loan programs. This is really around changing the way we calculate student debt and making sure that we're going to set the repayments at whatever is lowest, whether it's the wage price index or the consumer price index. So this is really good news for students right around the country who currently have debts, and the exact amount of money that they're going to get back can be calculated on the education.gov.au website with a very handy calculator.
Definitely. You've obviously been pushing very hard for this as well. What's the process been like getting it through?
I'm a new MP still. I was only elected in 2022. So this is a really exciting moment for me and my community to see what happens when we're able to work as a community in Chisholm and advocate for change is incredible. So we did a survey in my office for our electorate. We got hundreds of responses, and our survey was around what people wanted to see in terms of reforms in higher education, because Minister Jason Clare announced a higher education reform process, and something that came through really loudly and clearly from the electorate and from all kinds of people, whether they were students, whether they were parents, whether they were academics, was that people wanted to see a different way for us to calculate student debt, because it was seen as unfair that young people were having to take on huge amounts of debt, and that was starting to impact their ability to get loans and their ability to make decisions about their future. And something that was really troubling to me was we saw people really reconsider whether they should go to university or not based on the fact that they may be saddled with debt. And that's not what we want to see. We don't want people's ambitions for themselves and their futures to be limited by how much money they have. I've advocated quite hard with the minister, who was very receptive, I must say. He's been a terrific leader in this space. And written various opinion pieces. I remember I spoke to your team last year about this very issue, and have been speaking to students on campus about this issue. And I was so thrilled to see the announcement just recently that we were making this change, which I think is the right thing to do.
Yeah, definitely. So another change that's happening is getting rid of the Job Ready Graduate Scheme implemented by the previous government. So tell us about the process for getting rid of that as well.
So a lot of the different changes that have come through in the pre-budget announcements and recommendations from the Accord were really things that were strongly felt by the community in Chisholm, and I imagine communities right across the country. And to give a bit of additional context to the community that I represent, there are two universities in my electorate, Monash and Deakin, and as a result, many students, many academics, but also people that really care deeply about education in the community. We have lots of teachers that live and work in our community. So ensuring that there is an equitable pathway to education is really vital for the people that I have the privilege to represent. So part of having an equitable system means having a fee structure that doesn't penalise students for making decisions around what, you know, their future. Like, I say this as a humanities, former humanities student, and someone who was a humanities academic too, that the devaluation of the humanities really, I think, is an indictment on the previous government. And I think it is a really good thing that we encourage people to be engaged, critically thinking citizens, and that's exactly what humanities degrees do. And to see attempts made to undermine the study of the humanities by the previous government was appalling, and that's exactly what the Job Ready graduate scheme was all about.
Totally. So you've kind of foreshadowed that there are more changes in the pipeline. There were obviously a lot more in the accord that were recommended. Can you tell us anything that you might be pushing for with the minister?
I can say something that we are doing that I have pushed for with the minister is paid placements for pracs. So at the moment there's something I think probably a lot of listeners will be aware of called placement poverty, where because students have to do unpaid placements in a range of different degree programs, means that they can't work and that they're effectively been working for free. So we're introducing a scheme, and this comes out of the recommendations from the Accord process, for students studying nursing, teaching and social work. Those were the three areas identified by the expert panel of the Accord as the most urgent in need of support. $319.50 a week means tested for students undertaking pracs. This will mean people don't have to make a decision between continuing a degree or not based on their economic circumstances. These are really important areas of study and important areas of work. I think, you know, let's think about social work and think about the epidemic of gendered violence we've seen. We need more social workers. We need more people to work in the front lines in domestic and family violence services. So this is going to have really far-reaching impacts across our communities. I think a number of changes that have already been made that perhaps have slipped under the radar were things I was advocating for with the minister, such as more protections for academic freedom. So we made changes recently to the Australian Research Council grant program administration, so that ministers cannot intervene for political reasons and cancel funding for projects. I know people who had their funding cancelled for projects, largely in the humanities, by previous governments. It's appalling. And once, you know, a peer review panel has recommended a project get funded, we should respect the experts. And that's exactly what we're doing now. So, look, there's lots more to do in the research space. There's lots more to do around secure employment in academia. That is something I spoke about in my very first speech in Parliament. And I've been advocating hard for that. I hope that we're going to see a lot of measures around higher education reform in the upcoming budget and in budgets to come. There is a huge amount of work to do, and I don't expect it all to be done overnight, but I'll keep pushing hard for reform in higher education.
Definitely. And with the placement payments, obviously that covers quite a few of the most time-pressured placements that need, you know, extra funding. But is that step one? Is there going to be, because there's obviously quite a lot of degrees that were left out of that physio, we were talking about this on the show last week.
Yeah.
And I can't remember the other ones. But yeah, is that step one, or is this kind of the end of the placement payment scheme?
I don't think our government has an attitude that we're going to just limit our ambitions for the country. I don't think that's the case at all. I don't want to preempt what the future will hold and what decisions ministers will make, but I think every indication we've seen from the work we've been doing in higher education is that we know that reform in this space and a quality, sustainable system requires ongoing work. And that may mean making decisions around other programs to include in the future. I don't think we're closed-minded here. I think we're very open-minded about what the future of higher education looks like and have a very close relationship with the sector, with students, with academics, and we'll continue to look at what will deliver the best outcomes for students and for the nation.
Definitely. So there's a lot of really great changes that have been made. What do you think the tangible impact of those are for students?
Well, I think in the immediate term, it will be a sense of relief that debts will be wiped from that indexation that people had to pay last year. And I think a sense of relief too, that that's not going to be something that will be imposed in the future in the way it was. I mean, we shouldn't have a system where wages don't keep up with debt repayments in student loan programs. I think so that sense of relief, but also that the more money in the pocket for students will be part of this. And I think ensuring that people's decisions about what they do post-secondary school or through lifelong learning isn't limited by how much money they have in their bank account. Because something that the minister has been incredibly clear about and our government is really focused on is making sure that we have a system of higher education in this country that is accessible to everybody. We unfortunately have not seen the dial shift very much for people from low SES backgrounds and marginalised backgrounds, complete degrees. We want to change that. We want more people to go to university, and we don't want it to be something, you know, the sort of pre-Whitlam era question of can I afford it? We want anyone who has the marks and the ambition to be able to pursue what they want to pursue. And I also want to emphasise that the education reform that will help people get to university is not just about higher education. It's about what happens in the early years too, through early childhood education, through primary school, through high school, to make sure that people are on a really good education pathway that'll set them up for life.
Yeah, that's very interesting. And I think there's a lot of really interesting arguments around indexation at the moment because there are some alternative ideas coming around that. One of the ones from the University Accord was to change the date of indexation, so it comes after the compulsory repayments are made, after tax time. Do you think that's something we could be looking at? What would you think about that idea?
Well, I know the Minister is looking at every recommendation really closely from the from the Accord process. So I don't want to preempt any of his comments and thinking, but again, we went into this process with an open mind. We remain really open-minded around the recommendations. The people that are making these recommendations are both experts in their fields, but also people who consulted really widely and deeply on the key questions that the terms of reference sets out. So I think the minister is open-minded as to what we do. I don't want to, as I said, preempt any outcomes from his thinking and conversations around those recommendations. But I think the process was really good, and I think we've got a lot of really interesting ideas to contemplate.
And I think one of the more interesting ideas that I've seen from that was the Greens' idea to scrap indexation entirely. Do you think that's something we could realistically consider?
It didn't come up as a recommendation of the process, and I think we went through that consultation process for a reason. It's because we acknowledge that there are some, you know, pretty big opportunities and challenges in Australia's future, particularly in higher education, as a place where people can build skills that'll help build our nation's economic future, but also set people up for life in terms of being inquisitive citizens and contributors to their communities. And I think the process we went through was really considered. So I understand other political parties will have other views. I made a submission to the Accord process. As everyone else was able to, and the experts took all the ideas on board and they've arrived at their recommendations, and that's the advice the government's taking.
Yeah. So there was a particular focus in the accord on low SES and particularly Indigenous students. Can you see the government going further with those reforms potentially than what was in the accord? And I mean, I know we were talking just before, you don't know what's in the budget either.
I do not.
I was going to say, oh, is there going to be more in the budget? But no point asking that because we're recording that beforehand.
Yeah. So we had an interim report for the accord where a number of recommendations were made that we acted on pretty quickly. So one of those was around student safety. And so we've got a National Student Ombudsman, which is, I think, something that has been embraced really well by the community. One of those other recommendations was to ensure that First Nations students were able to get a Commonwealth-supported place at a university, because there had been limitations on those places, and so we removed those limitations. So that is an enormous step forward in terms of access. I think that what will be the indication of how much work we have to do will be things like the Closing the Gap report that let us know how we're tracking, and looking at the numbers of completions from students from marginalised backgrounds. And obviously, if we're not seeing any positive movement in relation to completions, there's clearly more work we need to do. So I think that there is a really big job to be done in making sure that our universities are genuinely inclusive and that equity targets are reached and, you know, exceeded, I hope. But until that work is done, there will always be more for government, for universities, for communities to do.
Definitely. And I mean, we could keep talking about unis all day, but we are in Parliament House and we've been pretty excited to come up here. So I thought we would love to know what your favourite thing about working in this building is.
I love so much of it.
If you
I
can
think
pick one.
I think
top five.
Yeah, we can have a list.
I think what is really great about working here is when you realise how thoughtful every detail in the building is. So from the colours that are used, the wood that is used, to really make this a very uniquely Australian building. The art collection is really incredible. So I have chosen artwork that reflects various things for me and my electorate. So I've got some artwork from Indigenous artists who are reflecting on Victorian art and colonialism, an artwork that was partly worked on through archival work at the State Library of Victoria. So it's a connection to Victoria and a connection as well to the arts in my electorate, because this was the place, in my electorate in Box Hill, where McCubbin and Tom Roberts and a whole range of Australian Impressionists did their work. And so having, you know, some of the artwork in my office be a bit of a response to that is something that's I've reflected on in terms of my choices. And I think it's important really that Parliament plays a role in supporting contemporary artists in particular through inclusion in our collection, and that there is a focus too on artists who perhaps have been overlooked through history, so First Nations, migrant, women artists. We have a really great education program in Parliament, which is great. So I love seeing when school children come and visit. And so if people do watch Question Time on television, which, you know, I don't know if that's in everyone's idea of a great time, but you might often see politicians just start randomly looking up and waving. And it's because we've seen school students in some of the galleries and they're waving at us, and so we wave back. So that's really nice. I think the emphasis on this building being a place where anyone can come in and access is really, really important. And I know there have been challenges through COVID, through, you know, historically national security threats, but, you know, this building does belong to the Australian people. And so I think it's really important that people get to be able to access it and enjoy it. And it's a great way to hold people like me, politicians, to account by being here, by seeing what we do, not just during question time, but through other parliamentary debates too. So that's one of my favourite things, I think, the fact that it's such an open building.
I guess to touch on the environment on working within Parliament, What has the vibe been like over the past week or two with the budget looming, one of the biggest or the biggest political night of the year?
Well, look, I only arrived on Sunday night in Canberra because I only spend time here when we have sitting weeks, because I spend most of my time in my electorate attending community events and meeting with constituents. But there's always a bit of a buzz in the air. I think largely there's a, you know, the suspense is very palpable in the air in terms of people wanting to find out what's in the budget. And it's a very busy time because a lot of people who hope to see various policies funded in the budget all come up to Canberra for budget night. So I know that there are a number of early childhood educators, aged care workers, all here in Canberra right now in anticipation of hopefully getting a wage increase and some much needed cost of living relief. I don't know where we'll land. I'm hopeful that we'll have some really positive news for those workers. We'll wait and see.
And do you think those are the kind of things your constituents are looking for in the budget, or is there anything else you think they really would like to see?
Cost of living relief is very important to not just my community, I think communities across the country, not just in terms of individual households. I think people want to see governments behave in a way that emphasises fairness, and that we're doing what we can to address, particularly, I think, intergenerational inequality that people have seen. I think the higher education reforms that we've gone through quite a bit are going to be very well received. And I think any targeted cost of living relief will be very well received too. I think they're the things that people are looking to the most in terms of the budget. And there'll, of course, be all sorts of programs for funding for various initiatives that people will be able to apply for in the future, that I think people are looking to as well, to make sure that there'll be funding.
And, of course, we can't neglect to mention that you were also a sinner.
Yes.
In your uni days.
I was.
Do you have a favourite memory from your time at SIN?
Oh, goodness. I think my favourite memories really are just about the people that I met while I was there. So some of them are still my closest friends now. And that's a really, it's a really nice experience to have had, and to have worked on news bulletins with people who ended up then being my housemates, and then I was bridesmaids at their wedding. You know, that whole journey that started off with SIN is, I think, my favourite memory. That, you know, we met as optimistic, wide-eyed young people, and, you know, life, despite, you know, pulling us all in different directions, we still managed to kind of remain friends and share in each other's experiences over the last many, many years.
That's promising for us, considering we thought this trip would ruin us as a three.
No, well, it's a great test, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I survived share houses with SIN friends. You'll survive this.
Yeah, but that's about 7 hours in a car together. Only one way to find out.
We made it through the first one.
Yeah, but there's a whole other one to go. Anyway, I think we can probably leave it there. EP, yes?
Thank you so much.
Great. Thank you so much for having us.
You've been listening to a Syn Media podcast, where young people run the show.